Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. It's a great day today, and great things coming up. Especially glad today because I have on my show a very special guest, Linda Hope. A very special event that's going to happen. Today, actually, it's my birthday, October 12th. That's right. October 12th. Linda Hope, Vice President of Hope Enterprise, daughter of British-born Bob Hope, will dedicate the newly refurbished Bob Hope Memorial Museum at the Immigration Museum on Ellis Island. This is a fantastic event that I can't talk enough about. Bob Hope has been I've just been a fan of his so much. He inspired so much in comedy. He is truly part of comedy history, if you look back upon it, in that starting from early vaudeville through the development of comedy on from films. I believe, actually, he was one of the first people to do a kinescope, which was the first televised of television. So he is the history of entertainment. And this is just going to be a fantastic, fantastic event. Linda, are you on the air?
I am.
Oh, I'm so
good
glad
morning,
we got
you. Good afternoon by you. How are
good
you?
Afternoon, good morning to you. Linda, this is a fantastic event.
Isn't that
happening.
Wonderful? Dad would
it
have
is.
Been so thrilled with this.
I cannot tell you, he has, your father was such a hero of mine in that he never made a bad film. He was funny in everything he did. And he didn't have to say anything to be funny.
Well, he had an attitude. He was a happy guy. And that came through. And he was full of fun and loved laughter more than anything, I think. Maybe my mother would fit in there as a close second. But
well, you have to be a good laugher. I think that would be a prerequisite.
Yeah. But he loved his audiences, and, as you said in your opening remarks, he began in vaudeville, which, I'm sure a lot of your audience doesn't know what vaudeville was, but
it's interesting because I'm so happy, I can't tell you, that this is happening, being a fan myself, Linda, of all comedy, especially vaudeville on. And it's unlike in the past. Today's comedian does... They don't have the tool, yesterday's comedians did, that you sang, you danced, you did jokes, you did it all.
Absolutely.
And they don't have that. They just instantly up there. He earned everything that, I think this is, I must mention Linda Hope for those of you. It's not just about Bob Hope today. Linda, you have a lot of credits also. Didn't you produce his Emmy Award-winning Bob Hope the first 90 years?
I did.
And his last show for NBC?
I did.
With the presidents?
Yes.
And a biography.
I did an A&E biography, which I wrote, and, I have been, I guess I know him pretty well after, I had the privilege of working with him for probably 30 or so years of my life, and knowing him all my life, and he was a pretty extraordinary man. And actually, when I was doing the A&E biography, I said to myself, oh, my God, I can't believe that this man did all that he did. And
now, it's interesting, you don't say my father, you say this man. Do you have to separate yourself as a producer and
well,
as a daughter?
I do a little bit. When we had a business relationship, I always referred to him as Bob or, instead of my dad all the time. But, it was a kind of schizophrenic kind of relationship in a way because we had our family personal relationship and all the things that we shared at home. And then I was also an employee and produced his shows and was responsible for getting the writers together and getting the talent and all of that stuff that goes into producing.
Well, can I just mention again, now it came to mind, that Bob Hope was ahead of his time. He put a woman in charge.
Well, there you go. At least he was you know, part of the times. You know, it was not a usual thing, really, to have a woman producer in those days. And so
ahead of time, I have to say. Ahead of
the
time on that. Now, let's talk about this special event. I mean, also, I just want to say before I forget, but I mean, I want to mention to the audience, you're also an author.
Yes.
And the name of the book?
The name of the book is Bob Hope, The First 100 Years. And it was really a book that he and I collaborated on. It was the last thing that we worked together on and was finished, you know, in time for his 100th birthday. And I would get together material and run over to the house and show it to him. And he'd say, oh, yeah, I like that. That's good. Or why don't you put such and such? So it was a kind of collaboration, which was really exciting and fun to be a part of.
And your mother is, can
My
I believe it, 101?
She is 101, and, you know, they were always very competitive on the golf course, and their senses of humor were wonderful together. They really complimented each other. And also, I think that because he lived to be 100, she was determined to live to be 101, and
That's
she's
very
done
funny.
That. And she's so cute, and, you know, I know misses him terribly, and she's not doing real well at this moment in time, and...
This is special, because let's talk about this event. A lot of people don't know that your father was an immigrant. Would you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. When he was 4 years old, he came over with his mother, who was in her early 30s, and four brothers. So imagine a 30-some-odd-year-old woman going on a terrible ship in steerage, which meant they paid the least amount of money, and they were down in the ship with no windows out or anything.
And for people who don't know, steerage is also where they put the cows, and the steerage was no lights.
Yeah, no, it was a miserable kind of thing, and a lot of immigrants came to this country steerage, and because it was the cheapest way to go. And he came with his young mother, who had these five boys. How she did it is just a miracle to me. And they arrived and were taken over to Ellis Island. They offloaded the boats. The ships in those days at a dock in New York, you know, right in the city, and then right away all the people that were steerage and all the sort of undocumented aliens, so to speak, would be taken immediately to Ellis Island for processing. And so to have this honor of having, actually the Congress had to pass this, to say that this could be named for Dad, this library could be named for Dad, and it was a big thrill. And I have to thank this wonderful man, Norman Liss, who's an attorney in New York and who was a friend of my dad's and who is the head of this Ellis Island Commission, not the foundation, but the commission. And he had this vision of having the library named for Dad, and talked to Dad about it while he was still alive. And Dad said, oh, do you think that would ever happen? And he said, well, I'm going to work on it. And he really persevered for 5 or 6 years on it. And he made it happen. And the family is so grateful.
And for those of you listening, because people listen from all over the world to the show, Ellis Island was a port of immigration in about 1890, where all the immigrants came in. If you came in first class, you could skip Ellis Island. If you came in second class or steerage, you had to go through. And to give you a visual, if any of you remember the scene in The Godfather where the little boy is standing in that big whole area. It is overwhelming. If you came from a small little town somewhere, and all of a sudden you're in the biggest building you've ever seen, and you're being moved like cattle, and you're being marked as ill or not ill, and separated from your family. For a four-year-old, it must have been a frightening experience. Little did he know, 100 years later, or more, that it would
yeah.
be a special. And by the way, I might mention it's free, correct, Linda?
Yes, I think that, I mean, the library is free. I'm not sure whether there's an admission to go to Ellis Island because
there's
you
an
have
admission
to go,
to go by boat. You can,
yeah.
you can take the ferry over. And it's by the way, you heard me say October 12th, this is going to be my favorite day. I'll never forget this because one of my favorite comedians and my birthday.
Oh, well,
happening.
Happy birthday to you. My goodness. The thing that's unfortunate is that this is not an event that's going to be open to the public. It's because
well,
it's
because it's an opening. That makes sense. But the next day it will be open.
The next day or whenever. People should not miss. People that love America should not miss Ellis Island because, to me, it's one of the most thrilling experiences. When I went over there with some friends from Ireland a number of years ago, before we knew about the museum happening and, I mean, the library happening, excuse me, I walked into that room and I was so touched. They have a huge visual in there that is so moving because the first thing you see is this long, it must be 20, 30 feet long in this great hall that everybody came into. I don't know what the actual word is, but it's an installation of all the kinds of suitcases.
Yes,
and
that is the suitcases that they left. It's in the center. I am also, Linda, I don't know if you know this, besides my comedy career, I have been a licensed New York City tour guide.
Oh, okay.
Ellis Island. So when you walk in, what is she describing? You walk in these, you walk up these steps into these big doors. The doors open. You're in a cavernous, echoing place. Some of the original tiles still remaining on the
yes.
floor.
Yeah.
And there is the luggage from every type of country to something they might have thrown on their back or carried in a sack, and it's displayed there to give you a feeling.
And it,
that the library is there is so important because here is a man. Throughout his career, he was honored for his humanitarian work. In 1996, the U.S. Congress honored Bob Hope by declaring him the first and only honorary veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces. And
that's
I was looking, when I was doing my research, Linda, because and it's massive.
And you've done a lot of research. You're great. You know so much.
He has been honored. I couldn't even count it. I started to try and count it, and I how many times he's been honored by
well, the
America.
Thing that Guinness Book of Records has him in there as one as the most honored entertainer in the show business history, I guess. And he has over 2,000 plaques and citations and honors, and including a number of honorary doctorates. And
not to mention the United States Congressional Gold Medal.
That's right. It was presented by JFK and, you know, was one of the big moments of Dad's life. And he loved that.
And the Medal of Freedom. Everything about your father, it must be something to live with. That everything
well,
about him is so much. There's, it's just so much. And how perfect that this museum will have a library, and I believe some of his things will be there as well?
Absolutely. We have a display that's going in, and there'll be some of the memorabilia that is has been part of his life and there for people to see and enjoy and think about. And there's some lots of wonderful pictures.
And memorabilia?
Yeah, well, the memorabilia, that's one area. There'll be some display cases with some of those things in. And then there will be also a number of blow-up photographs with the descriptions, you know, throughout the rooms there in the library.
And some of his comedy, I believe?
Some of his comedy will be there, and we have a little display of video terminal or monitor, whatever you call it, where people can push a button and see about his life and see some of his performance and that sort of thing. So it's an interesting thing.
Well, you know what, for me, Linda, on a personal level, it is. I am also first-generation American. My father came through Ellis Island. Is that here is a man at 4 years old who came to this country with a talent that you wouldn't say is even a trade.
Uh-huh.
Other than himself as a product. And he built that product into a brand that became known worldwide, but not only such a brand, but inspired our troops.
Well, I think that's
inspired people.
True, yeah.
He was there. He was the father to the soldiers far from home. He was there to make them laugh, to so inspiring.
Well,
and now that our mayor here is issuing a proclamation, am I correct?
That's what I understand, yes. We're very thrilled and honored by that. And, you know, it should, you know, I mean, it's making this day so special. And I think had the mayor known that it was also your birthday, we could have included that in the plaque.
Yes, comedy concept. Yes, oh, I don't know. I think he's more important. But what is important is keeping that this library is just going to be so inspiring to people, whether you know who Bob Hope is or not, to know here is a man who came.
Well, that's what we hope.
And became a legend.
The downstairs section of the museum is really wonderful, and it shows what people went through. What we're hoping to do upstairs is by highlighting Dad and the honor that was given to Dad, is to highlight what one immigrant could do. I mean, what one person was able to do if they really gave it their all, which Dad did. And it's our hope that we're going to be able to have an immigrant of the year, which is, you know, one side, there are two sides. One has most of all of Dad's stuff, and Dad will be the first immigrant of the year. But it is our hope and the Hope family's hope that this will continue, and we will be able to take some of the wonderful people that passed through Ellis Island who went on to become legends in their own fields, like I.M. Pei and, you know,
yes,
some of the...
Yes, the designer-architect?
Yes.
Who did the World Trade Center?
I'm not sure whether he did the World Trade Center.
He did something. I know what he did, the cube on Broadway.
But, I mean, he's an internationally recognized architect. And there's a whole list of people that have come through Ellis Island and who have gone on, to distinguish themselves. Isaac Asimov, the Russian writer and novelist, and Charles Atlas, who was the bodybuilder in the old days.
Yes, Atlas.
Irving Berlin. The list goes on and on of all. Frank Capra, the wonderful Oscar-winning motion picture director. List to choose from.
Yes, it does. And was I correct, if I remember my trivia correctly, that your father was the first televised person Kinescope?
Oh, yeah. He actually, they did an experiment out here on, it was Channel 5 KTLA. It was one of the really early, early things, and he was there and did that, and they did do a kinescope of that, which we have.
Which is also, again, history.
It is, and then he was a little bit skeptical about television, actually, and he got into it a little bit later than some of his other vaudeville people, like Jack Benny and George Burns and Gracie Allen and Fred Allen and those people from early radio, Edgar Bergen. And, when you think about Edgar Bergen, a ventriloquist
on
the
radio.
Whole thing of a ventriloquist.
And for people who don't know,
if
you're too young, that's Candace Bergen's father.
Yeah, but Charlie McCarthy was his famous dummy. And, you know, but what they did really was that these men and women that were part of vaudeville, this huge system, because entertainment people didn't, radio was just coming in, and television was non-existent, so people and motion pictures were just starting, and it wasn't really a thing where people went every week to the movies. But what happened
was,
it was live,
and it was four or five shows a night. And
exactly,
Linda, we have a caller on the line.
Okay,
let's see who's on the line. Hello, you're on the air. Hello. I think they're just listening. They forgot their. Hello. Okay, I can't hear them. All right.
All right.
It's a 202 number. If you're listening 202, go to the chat room and tell me who you are. There's a lot of people calling and don't know how to use the.
Okay.
That's okay. But it's so interesting, too. Can you tell us now about, because this is such a special event. This is a dedication ceremony. Can you give us a taste of what's going to happen on the 12th?
Well, sure, I can. What's going to happen, a friend of mine, Nancy Malone, a television director and she's a New Yorker and all of that, and I enlisted her aid, and so she is directing the program. And what we're going to do is have my niece, Miranda Hope, who's my dad's great-grandchild, be opening the show, and she's going to be singing an immigrant song, which has to do with my grandfather's immigrant eyes, and we have some video that accompanies some of this, and then we'll have a couple of speakers, Norman Liss and David Lutzinger from the Park Service people, and then we'll have Robert White is going to sing. He's a wonderful tenor, and his mother was an immigrant and came over on the one of the ships from Ireland.
Most of the vaudeville performers were immigrants.
Yeah, I would
Stan,
say so.
Stan Laurel?
Yeah. And so he'll be singing a song to my dad. And then we have Chuck Scarborough, one of your local NBC people.
Again.
Who's going to talk about dad and television and radio. And then we're going to have Robert Osborne will be handling the film section. And I think most people know Robert from his Turner Classic Movies gigs. And he's very, very knowledgeable and will be wonderful talking about that. And then to close the program, Michael Feinstein, who is a friend and an absolute love, is going to be singing Thanks for the Memory. And obviously that's the song that Dad made famous. He debuted it in a film, the big broadcast of 1938, and went on to use it as his theme song. And for years he would always change the lyric to it to suit the situation and close his radio first and then television shows with a Thanks for the Memory. And so he's going to sing that, and that will pretty much be the program.
That will be closed to the public, but the next day it's going to be open. I have a call.
Absolutely,
over.
And I
hello?
Really... Hello?
Hello?
Hello? I'm sorry. I'm trying to get this person on the air. Hello, you're on the air? You have a question? I think they're listening with... And they got the phone on at the same time. But speaking of your father, I think I have a little something here. I'll play it. Bob Hope, Coming to America.
Oh, okay.
Here we go.
I was born in England, and I left at a very early age because I knew there was very little chance of me becoming king.
And I was born in Eltham. The house is still there. It's true. The house is still there. And it was bombed during the war by the RAF. I was born in London and came to America. My father came over a year ahead, and he was a stonemason and worked on this church, and then said, you got to all come. So the seven brothers at that time, no, six, one was born here. We all got on the boat, and we had a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun playing with the cattle and everything. When we got to Ellis Island, I ran all over the place. I wouldn't let them vaccinate me. I didn't want them to put that needle. I didn't want that. And I ran all over the place. I must have been 3 years old or something. But they finally got to me.
Is that where it ends?
I think that's it, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
He's funny just talking.
He is. I think he was doing that as part of one of the television specials that we did where he was asked to talk a little bit about his early years, and so he has those remembrances. And he used to tell me, too, that his mother, before they left England, dressed them all in, you know, all the clothes that they owned practically. So each kid had, you know, two or three sets of underwear and a couple of pants and shirts and jackets and everything, all wearing them all at the same time, because that way they didn't have to have suitcases to take that stuff. So it was interesting.
Well, it's interesting too, but this is he's had so many honors over the years. He's had so many honors, but I think that also there's a performing arts center after him. Is that in the U.S. Naval Academy alumni?
Yes, that's right. They have a big auditorium, gymnasium type thing that was named after him, and there's a theater at SMU, and you know, there are a number of things around the country that people have done to honor him, which is he was
four
always
stars
very...
on the Walk of Fame. Four.
Yeah, he does. So I guess
which,
that
which
way
is
you can't
why this is such a great event that is happening, and the Immigration Museum, because none of us, all of us, came from somewhere else, basically, down the line, unless you're Native American Indian, and then you migrated from the ice up north. But everyone came through there, and when you go through this museum, it's such Ellis Island is such a wonderful place. First off, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful view of the city. But you get the history, and if you go to the third floor, they also have the traditional garbs from different countries that people
right.
wore, the things that they would carry with them, the things
uh-huh.
that they brought to this country, from musical instruments to pots and pans.
And prayer books from different religions and all of that. So it's it really shows America as a melting pot, and, you know, that we're all together. And I think in these times when there's such a division in this country, Democrats and Republicans and different religions and all of that, that it's really important to think of what these men and women who came before us contributed to this country. And each person had part of making this country what it is. And we can't forget that, and I think it's a wonderful reminder. Plus, as you say, it's a great kind of an outing, and wonder when the weather is lovely, and even when it's not, it's just a real experience to go and be through there and to see what this country is made of. And it makes you stop and think, why can't we get along today, and why can't we all pull together as Americans to make this country great again.
And no one did more for that than your father, from all of his generous work to his giving of his time, to his traveling, to at his own risk numerous times. But everything that he did, just it bespeaks, if that's the word, bespeaks what you can accomplish. And that's, as you were saying, to bring everyone together, but not to give up so easily.
Exactly. I mean, he struggled. He had a hard time. One story that I always found very interesting, we were flying in his plane, and he had to be in his late 80s at that point, and he resisted getting his own plane for, I don't know, a long, long time. And then his friend Alex Spanos, who had a fleet of planes and who owned the San Diego Chargers, said to him, "Bob, you got to get a plane." And so anyway, he did, and he had this small Gulfstream plane that he loved. And one day I was flying with him. We were going across country, and he used to look down, and because he had been across this country so many times, he could have been a tour guide of what you were flying over. And we were coming, I think, from New York and going to back to L.A., and he said, "Come here." He beckoned me with his finger, and he said, "Come here." And I said, "What is it, Dad?" And he said, "Look down there." And I said, "Yeah, it's a lot of lights." And he said, "No." He said, "That's Chicago." And I said, "Oh, that's interesting." And he said, "You know, many, many years ago when I was a young fellow starting out in vaudeville, I was in Chicago. I was starving. I didn't know when I'd get my next job, and I had my face pressed against an Henrici restaurant, Henrici, I think it was called, restaurant, where all these people were dressed up in their finery and having dinner and all of that." And he said, "I was drooling." And he said, "And here I am, up in this plane, flying my plane, flying across America." He said, "This is the only country in the world where that could happen."
and that he did. And he went on his comedy career was nonstop.
Yeah. Once he caught on, he went straight up and continued and rose to number one in everything that he did, really. I mean, he was number one in movies for a while. He was number one in television, number one in radio. And, he was an amazing man. He had books on the bestseller list and won an Oscar for Thanks for the Memory, or the writers of the song did. He didn't. But
he made it happen.
Yeah, and he was an extraordinary man.
And this museum, by the way, is open all year except for Christmas Day.
Well, see, you know that, and I didn't know that.
let me just say, is there a website here? And I have one for general information, which is www.nps.gov/STLI. And is there more where a website we can go to?
Well, there, I don't know. I'm sure that there is, and that's my
fault. Oh, if you Google
not...
it, you'll find it. It's there. But also
and we have a website too.
That's what I wanted. Okay.
It's www.bobhope.com.
Oh, easy to remember. www.bobhope.com. For those of you who don't know, I see some of my guests from England. Hey, he's one of yours. If you can go back and you want to learn more about who this is, you know who I'm going to, Linda, I have to tell you, reintroduce him to? My 15-year-old son.
Oh, great.
Because he kept reading all this. "Mom, Bob Hope?" And I go, "Oh, my gosh." I said, "Michael, I've got to show you his movies. I've got to show you his movies."
In my experience, this is the way that a lot of young people will get to know Bob Hope, certainly by the road movies. And they were, they work. We've had film festivals and all of that that I've been to. And kids really enjoy the kind of zany things that went on. And it was actually very innovative, the thing of looking to the camera and talking and breaking that kind of third wall.
The third or fourth wall. What would it be in films? The third or fourth?
Yeah.
Yes. And he would do it, and even with one line. I was Googling on YouTube, and he was in the movie, and they were describing zombies.
Uh-huh.
You know, a heartless group of people who look past you and And your father only had one line. And he goes, "You mean like Republicans?" One line. And you could see him waiting for that. It was just such a comedy gem.
Yeah.
Of waiting for that line.
Yeah. He was very, very talented. And his timing, which was something that he really perfected over the years in vaudeville. And, you know, he used to always say, it's too bad all these young people all of a sudden go from being nowhere, had no experience, and all of a sudden they're in the star of a television show getting $1 million an episode, and they don't have a chance, really, to perfect their craft and get the timing and get the understanding of an audience and how to play an audience and all of that kind of stuff.
That's what I was reinforcing that earlier, that
exactly.
You do not have that kind of talent anymore. You do not have, I think the closest that might come to it a little bit, but he stopped really doing comedies and became more a writer, Steve Martin.
Uh-huh.
Who played the banjo and did jokes and tap dance and wrote songs.
Yeah. And I mean,
your father
and
his films, he worked probably with every major star of their at that time.
Yes, he certainly did. And the thing that was wonderful, and there is another talking about movies, film that he did really telling the story of a fellow vaudevillian who was Eddie Foy. And
Eddie and the Seven Foys?
Yeah, Eddie Foy and the Seven Little Foys.
I love that movie.
And Dad does some dancing in that film that's just astounding with Jimmy Cagney, who a lot of people just remembered as being a tough guy in the movies, a cocky little guy, a little Irishman. And the fact of the matter was he was a brilliant dancer, and they both got together and they rehearsed for, I remember it was like a week and a half, 2 weeks to get this number perfected. And they did this tap dance that's unbelievable. They jump up on a table.
It's almost like he took a little bits from his life in that.
Well, he did.
Raising the kids, you know,
yeah.
All your clothes on, let's go.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, there's an exhibit, or there used to be an exhibit, but I think it's now available on the Library of Congress website. And for a number of 10 years, really, they had put together a wonderful exhibit of Bob Hope, and it was called Bob Hope and the American Vaudeville Tradition. And it shows how Dad took that formula of what he learned in vaudeville, and really it stayed with him his whole life and his television shows and all of that.
He used all of his tools, as we would say in the trade.
Exactly.
He used all the tools he had to make what he had. And we have a few minutes left, but Linda, tell us something that a lot of people don't know about Bob Hope.
Well, I think a lot of people think comedians are just funny when they're up in public and all of that. But Dad had just a wonderful sense of humor and the best disposition of anybody I've ever known in my whole life. I mean, very seldom was he ever angry. He was a happy guy. And, you know, growing up, he used to be like one of the kids and used to do things all the time to kind of amuse my brother and I. And he was amazing. He used to create a little character called Bessie. And he would say Bessie was a little orphan girl that would come to the window, and we'd say, "Oh, Dad, can we see Bessie?" "No, no." But he would do a little falsetto voice, and Dad would do the two-part thing. He'd go over in our dining room when the curtains were drawn, and he would part the curtains so just he could see outside, and he would have this conversation with Bessie. And he would do both voices. He'd do, you know, "Hi, Mr. Hope, this is Bessie, and I just want to know what's going on." So, you know, and we'd say, Dad, we got to see, can we see Bessie? And he never let us see her, obviously, but that was like a running thing all the time.
It's such a great, you must be very proud and along with all of your accomplishments, as well as a producer, a writer, vice president of Hope Enterprises, everything that you've done. A&E, you've done so much, and I'm sure he's very proud of you as well. And the fact that this is honoring him, as I can't think of another American comedian who should be more honored than Mr. Bob Hope.
Well, thank you so much.
And I want to, you know, just say if there's anything that you learned from your father that you would like to share with comedians today.
It's hard work. He worked very hard at what he did. And I remember he used to call the writers even in the middle of the night if he heard some kind of breaking story or something. And he'd say, okay, guys, let's get some stuff on this. And he would try to keep up to the minute. And, you know, in his time it was a different technology, but for what he did, he was right on top of things.
Again, ahead of his time.
He worked very, very hard, and it's, you can do anything you want to do if you really, really put your mind to it and work hard.
That's what we're saying here, and that's about the Memorial Library dedication on October 12th. To Bob Hope. People, you can go there anytime after the 12th. You can visit. You can take either get the tickets down at Battery Park. You can get the tickets to Statue of Liberty. You can skip the Statue of Liberty if you want to go right to the island. But you get the tickets there. You board the ferry and see a part of history and see what he became and what you can become with just a little bit of hard work. I want to thank Linda. And Linda, every time I do this, it's going to make me cry. But I have to... I have to do it. We just have to have this. Thank you. You've been a great guest.
Thank you.
And congratulations on this historic occasion, sanctioned by the government as well.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.
Thanks for the memory of sentimental verse, nothing in my purse, and chuckles when the preacher said, for better or for worse. It was. Thanks for the memory of Schubert's serenade, little things of jade, and traffic jams and anagrams and bills we never paid. How lovely it was. We who could laugh over big things were parted by only a slight thing.
I wonder if we did the right thing. Oh, well, that's life, I guess.
I love your dress.
Do you?
It's pretty.
Thanks for the memory of faults that you forgave, rainbows on a wave,
and stockings in the basin when a fellow needs a shave. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the memory of tinkling temple bells, alma mater yells,
and Cuban rum and towels from the very best hotel.
Oh, how lovely it was. Thanks for the memory of cushions on the floor, hash with Diddy Moore, that pair of gay pajamas that you bought and never wore.
Say, by the way, whatever became of those pajamas?
Huh?
Huh?
We said goodbye with a highball.
Then I got as high as a steeple.
Did you?
But we were intelligent people.
No tears, no fuss. Hooray for us. Strictly on the news, darling, how are you?
And how are all those little dreams that never did come true?
Awfully glad I met you.
Cheerio and toodaloo.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for being a guest, Linda. Linda Hope, special guest, special times. Thank you all, and congratulations. Goodbye.